Hey, babe, your hair's all right. Do you know I have a David Bowie tattoo?
I think you told me, and now I don't remember.
Well,
like, I don't remember what it is.
I've loved him since like when Golden Years was current. You know what I mean? Like he's one of those that always just like stuck with me. I don't know why. It just made me feel a certain way. Great. But I loved his androgyny. I loved his just sort of out of the box. I loved his constant recreation of who he was and his change from genre to genre and just his innovation. He just blows my mind. Yeah. And I sing in a band. And I love tattoos, so that's another thing. But I wanted one that was musical or like, you know, said, hey, I love music. But I didn't want to like have musical notes or I didn't know what to get. And then one day it occurred to me, oh, my God, I love David Bowie. And I did the Aladdin Sane the bolt on my face. 1 year for Halloween, we had a gig and I dressed up like Bowie. And so I went in and I saw my tattoo buddy, Hector Fong, also known as Fine Line Fong. And I said, can you do one of these? And he put it right on my wrist. So it's my microphone hand, my left arm. Mm-hmm. And you can see it right there. And I'll take a picture of it and text it to you. But I love it. Like, I love it. And mwah. It just makes me so happy.
And David Bowie makes me happy. I think I shared this story before, but I'll share it again. It was so cute. My brother was like 3 years old, and I think I was 15, and I was watching The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, yeah. You get to see his wiener in there.
And I remember I was watching it, and I just said, you know, and my little brother was so cute. He was just my little mini me and followed me everywhere I went. And so I said, I love David Bowie. And my brother looked at me and he goes, and Ben, which is his name. Like, I love David Bowie, too. And I just always remember his little blonde curls and long eyelashes looking at me just going, and Ben. But I used to torture him because David Bowie in that movie took out, you know, his lenses, his contact lenses. And they were these big looking contact lenses. And Benjamin freaked out. He was crying and screaming. So I wear contact lenses and I just seized the moment and always took the opportunity to pretend I was going to take my lenses out and he would scream and run in the other room. So I was like torturing him.
Because that's what people do.
Yeah, exactly. But he was so freaking cute. Oh my God. Anyway, so I wanted to ask you a question. You know, this whole debate is going on right now about abortion. And the right is saying that we are pro-abortion. So I just want to see, I have a feeling, like I have an opinion about that. I just wanted to know what your opinion about that term is.
Okay. I can't not have this be part of my answer. You posted something on Twitter. I don't know if it was this morning or last night, but it's like, just because, I believe in a woman's right to choose doesn't mean I want to have an abortion. Mm-hmm. It was very eloquently worded. I don't have it in front of me right now, but if it makes him feel better to call it pro-abortion, then okay. I mean, you know what, when I was 17 years old and found myself pregnant and just starting college and, you know, working as a cashier in a restaurant and just trying to survive, I was pro-abortion. If you want to call it that, yeah, that's right. When I had, believe me, there are people who find themselves in situations where they having a child is not the right thing to do. If that's what the right wants to call it, you know, they're just finding reasons to, you know, try to demonize us.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, and also, guess what? If you don't want to have an abortion,
don't have one.
Don't. Well, but don't tell. Yeah. Don't tell me what I can do with my body. It doesn't piss me off as much. I honestly.
Well, I don't get pissed off so much, but I mean, this is what I wrote. I said, if someone's pro-abortion, it doesn't mean they love getting abortions. I don't love colonoscopies or root canals.
I do, but okay.
I don't love colonoscopies or root canals, but I'm grateful I can get them if I need them. I'm totally pro-root canal, even though I never want one. And so
right. There you go. You're so good.
I think that you know, I mean, I've seen a lot of conversation about this and arguing about this and, you know, oh my God, you're pro-abortion type thing. It's kind of like the right is always taking our words and turning, and somehow they are allowed to succeed in turning those words or phrases into something terrible, like the word liberal or the word feminist or whatever. And then liberals are always so quick to go, okay, well, we're going to change that word. You're not supposed to say that word now. Fuck that shit. I am a liberal feminazi slut who is pro-abortion. Get over yourself. I'm so sick and tired of them owning the argument and controlling the narrative in what they call the liberal media, which, you know, bends over backwards to make conservatives feel good. And, you know, it drives me crazy. But yeah, it's like, I mean, I don't get pissed off at the Republicans so much for trying to change the narrative. That's what I've come to expect. What I get pissed off about is how Democrats allow them to do it. It's like, you know, oh, okay, I'm not a liberal, I'm a progressive. And then what happens when they turn progressive into a dirty word? Then what are you going to call you? How many times are you going to let them make you run away from who you are? It's just the stupidest thing I've ever seen. So it's like, I would really like for liberals, progressives, whatever the fuck you call yourself, to
own
just,
it.
Yeah, own it. Just say, yes, I'm pro-abortion. Goodbye. I don't care. It's like, nobody wants to have a fucking root canal. But you know what? Right. Thank God you can get a root canal. So I see that going around and I'm just like, really, you're really going to let them take over that argument? Please don't. Please don't.
Right. Damn
oh
it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So I'm excited. We're going to be talking to Charlotte Clymer and then we're going to be talking to Jen Kirkman and then we're going to be trying to figure out, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of people that I know that I want to contact and see if we can get on the show. I'm not going to mention them now because they might say no. So, but I have some good people that I know that we can start interviewing. And I just really want to take this to another level because it's kind of fun. And I'm just going to be honest with you here. When I lost my Facebook page, I think everybody knows I lost basically all of my income. And so I'm starting from scratch. And there's no way that somebody can make a living right now doing what I did. It's just gone. Even, you know, we've heard the stories that Huffington Post and BuzzFeed have gone through massive layoffs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the reason, it's not all of it, but a lot of it is because of Facebook. They have seriously suppressed the reach of political articles. And they also, like, for instance, I, you know, this podcast is on Patreon and so is my writing site. And I've realized because I was able to keep my like page as opposed to my, I call it a like page. It just means it's the page that you go and you like. And I can't friend anybody on that page. So it's just a page. There's a profile and a page. So when I post on that like page, whenever you have one of those pages, there's an option to boost posts. So you can mm-hmm. pay to get a larger audience. When I post my Patreon articles or podcasts, that boost post goes gray, which means I can't boost it. And I think the reason is because it's a Patreon is a site, you know, where you earn money, where people pay to follow, you know, to support you. And I think that Facebook doesn't like anybody making money except for Facebook. So you're not even allowed to boost those posts. Not that I ever have. But it's like, wow. So I figured I've got to, you know, I can't earn a living doing what I want to do as a writer right now. Because, you know, it's like, I don't want to go write for Mother Jones. I'm not a investigative reporter. You know, I'm somebody who writes opinion pieces and, you know, maybe a little bit of analysis, but it's just basically I'm talking about feminism. I'm talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. Sometimes I have an opinion on Trump or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I used to be able to write for Huffington Post, but they've gotten rid of their opinion section. At least from what I understand, the guy that was my editor is gone. He got laid off. So I thought, well, you know, what can I do? And, you know, we've already got this strong foundation for the podcast. And I'm just looking to build on it. So I'm kind of excited about it. And I really hope that when you see whether it's this podcast or my writing site or anybody, including Bob Seska, who has mm-hmm. a Patreon site or something like that, please engage on it in Facebook because I think it's getting suppressed. And also, you know, comment on the articles that you're reading in the Patreon so that we know what you like and what you don't like. We really do pay attention to that stuff. So I don't know. I just wanted to say that because I'm like, I'm excited about starting. I'm frightened. I'm excited. I'm frightened because it's like, okay, once again, I'm starting from scratch. I pretty much lost everything. I still have my Twitter and I still have, you know, my body of work behind me. But this huge page that had tons of engagement is now gone. And I've got this little shadow sad Facebook page. You know, I mean, it's, there's still good people on it. But compared to what I was used to, it's just like, it's like the sad page now.
You
know? I used to be able to like post stuff that was really interesting or thought provoking and get all kinds of shares. And now it's just a few comments and one or two shares. And it's like, it's just not the same. You know, it's just not the same.
Yep. Got to find new outlets.
New
and
outlets.
This is one of them, girl.
Yeah. So we're going to definitely do that. And I know there's like, you know, I mean, I think we're just going to be doing some changes that I'm not even sure of yet. You know, but I'm going to play around because we're going to, you know, again, the feedback always helps. We like to know what you're thinking. What guests would you like to have? And we can't always get them, but we can at least try. What subjects do you want to hear us talking about? Stuff like that. You know, we're just interested in what you think. So so that's about it, what I've got for this show. What about you? What's going on with you? Anything interesting?
Oh, life is interesting every day. It's so funny because I never imagined, first of all, I have to say I've got, you know, I have two kids, I've got a husband, I'm starting a new day job that requires a lot of, I'm studying for some tests and I'm getting myself out there and I'm trying to develop a business because I gotta help. I can't rely on my husband to float the boat all the time. Mm-hmm. And we've got things and we have a kid who's a freshman in high school who wants to, he told me the other day, go to Stanford and study documentary filmmaking there. Wow. And I'm like, okay.
That's awesome.
So I know, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And so, but now what? I've got 3 years to build on the little college savings plan we started when he was one that has like 20 grand in it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like shit is real over here.
Yeah.
And I think about what struck me and strikes me on a daily basis, but something that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, I've been sober for a really long time, 18 years. I had 18 years on the first of this year.
Wow. Congratulations.
And thank you. Thank you very much. And I think, you know, that's just something I don't take it for granted, but it's just who I am now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm that person. And something that came up in conversation with my son the other day was we were watching Pulp Fiction. One of his faves is Quentin Tarantino. He loves the Quentin Tarantino movie. So Friday night we watched The Hateful Eight and Saturday night we watched, and we've seen these movies 92 times together, you know, but something new comes up every time. Mm-hmm. And in Pulp Fiction, I stopped and I said, I want to talk to you about drugs for a second. He goes, Mom, I know. I said, babe, I just, you know, you got to know that like, this is stuff. This is real. And I had a problem. And he goes, I know what I come from. And he said, I am a straight edge person. I am one of the only straight edge people in my high school. And I go, really? And then I started naming some of his friends. He goes, oh, they're straight edge too. They're straight edge too. But it was really important for him to tell me that he's been paying attention.
Wow.
And that and he likes his life living it this way as a straight edge person. And I'm like, you know, he owns that identity. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, it's just, it to me, that's just been on my mind a lot lately because I don't want my kids to be fucked up, you know, and both their mother and their father are in recovery. And so it's one of those things that, you know, it's on my mind and I do think about it. And I do worry about it. And I want him and my daughter for that matter, she's only 10, but you know, that'll be coming down the pike soon enough. But it's something that my husband and I are really aware of a lot now because he's playing sports. He's working really hard to get good grades in school. And he's constantly, it's in his face, you know, weed is legal and kids are using it, you know, it's so anyhow, I don't know. That's really been on my mind lately. and I'm proud. I feel pretty, you know, secure in the moment anyway, because mm-hmm. I know that we're good, but I don't know. I think about that stuff.
All I can say about that is when I was a teenager, my mother's approach I thought was a great approach. And it's not to say that I didn't try drugs, because I absolutely did. But she never
tried them.
She never told me not to do them. All she did was, and same with sex. She had the same approach with sex and with drugs. She's like, look, I lived with her. She was a single mother. So she says, I can't be with you 24/7. You're going to be out with your friends and you're going to have decisions to make. And she said, so all I can do is tell you certain consequences of those decisions that you may face. And then you're going to have to decide if you're ready to face those consequences. So she put all of the responsibility in my lap. It was like, you get to choose this. I'm not going to tell you no, which was, you know, I think when parents draw a line and say, you're not allowed to, I mean, obviously there's certain things that you're going to tell your kid, no, you can't do that. But when it's stuff like drugs or when it's stuff like sex, when they're out on their own and there's all this pressure, just to tell them they're not allowed to do it is almost like saying, please go try this.
Right.
And, you know, and it's like my girlfriend did the same with her son. She's like, I can't be with you 24/7. You have to make your own choices. So, you know, I mean, my mom told me at least about sex. She's like, I do not want to be a grandmother when you're a teenager. So if you're going to have sex, please tell me and I'll take you to the doctor and we'll get birth control and I won't say a damn thing. Well, I didn't tell her that I was going to have sex. But when I did first, you know, the first time I ever had sex, I used a condom. And every time after that, I used a condom. Eventually, it took me about a month, but I admitted it to her. I explained and she wasn't surprised. And then, eventually I did go get birth control pills. But with drugs, it was the same thing. And so, you know, I mean, there were opportunities for me. You know, I tried, I smoked pot. I tried cocaine because in my high school, oddly, it was like 85, 86, everyone was doing coke and it was just around everywhere and girls got it for free. Guys would just give it to girls. So I had the opportunity to do it a number of times and I don't remember how many times I did it, 10 to 20, and it was spread out over the course of maybe 2 years. And the more I did it, the more I didn't like it. I liked it at first and I had fun and everything, but I felt like I was being poisoned. And maybe it was cut with different things. I don't know, but I was fortunate that I didn't become addicted to it. It was just like, I didn't like it. And then eventually, you know, it would be offered to me at parties or whatever. And I had absolutely no, there was no temptation there. It was like, ew, no, get that away from me. And then, you know, I mean, I was also around people who did heroin, not a lot, but a couple of times, and ecstasy. And I had heard somewhere, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but I had heard that with ecstasy, you could go on a bad trip and never come off of it. And that was all I needed to hear. It's like, I don't need to try ecstasy. And that probably isn't true, but on the very small chance that it was like, well, it's not worth it. I'm not interested in trying it. So I, you know, and I tried downers and I'm like, why the fuck does anyone like these? It just make you sleep. And then once I tried speed, which was just fucking awful. I hated it. And then, you know, I mean, and that was pretty much it. I mean, those were like the four main drugs that I tried. And like I said, I was fortunate that, I mean, I was never a big drinker. I've never been a big drinker. And now as I get older, it's even worse because I can't tolerate it. I feel so shitty. I feel good for like an hour and then I feel like shit for 3 days. So it's just not worth it. So, but yeah, I mean, I think as a parent, that would be so difficult because, you know, you just send your kid out into the world and you're like, please make the right decisions.
Right.
please don't fuck it all up.
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
But you're a good mom because you understand firsthand what drugs can do. And, you know, so, I mean, I know that as a young person, it really helped that my mother put it all on me because then I didn't always make the best choices. Oh, no, I did try mushrooms. I did try mushrooms. And I wound up in Hollywood Presbyterian. I tried them once and I was in Hollywood Presbyterian and that was the worst fucking experience I ever had in my life. So it was one time and that was it. And it was a little bit of peer pressure because it wasn't like I really wanted to try mushrooms. All my friends were taking them at that, you know, this particular evening. And I knew they had tried them before and I had only heard good things about them. And I thought just because they were mushrooms that they would somehow be better than dropping acid. And it just did not
go.
Well, not for me. Oh. It was fucking awful. And that was all I needed to know. That was it. But again, you know, I mean, I made stupid choices. And, you know, but again, and I didn't get punished when I tried it. My mother figured, well, you know, landing in Hollywood Presbyterian on a Saturday night, you know, was not fun. And she figured that was pretty much punishment enough. And it was, because there was no way I was ever going to go back to that. But I think that's just really important when you're a parent that you're able to have that open communication with your child. And
right.
Obviously
that's,
you do.
Yeah. Well, we try. I mean, I do. Sometimes he's just like, but
of course they all are.
Yeah. But when it gets serious and when I don't, I'm not telling him don't. I'm saying you're probably going to try these things. Just know what you come from. So that so far is, you know, it's working because he doesn't have any desire.
Yeah.
And I think he likes being present. He's very engaged. He loves his school. He loves his friends. He's making all sorts of new friends. He loves, you know, playing water polo. That was kind of neat. Hmm. He's interested in trying new things that are where he has to be, you know, present mentally.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Another thing is he does have a girlfriend. And so I told him, I said, you know, we've had the sex talk. Like I said, I think you're too young for it. But when you are ready to embark, I would really appreciate it if you talk to me and Dad about it so that we can help you be equipped for it.
Equipped.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Prepared. I mean, it's like they just have to understand the consequences. If they understand the consequences, which is obviously pregnancy and possible STI, you know, I mean, one of the things that I was all for, I mean, I'm not a parent, but if I were a parent, it's funny, Bob and I both, I think, had the same human sexuality textbook from college because we talked about the pictures of the STIs that they had in that book and they were just disgusting. I mean, there was this one with, it was like a penis covered with venereal
Shankers.
Warts. Yeah, venereal warts. And then, but also, what do you call it? Herpes. And you know, the open sores, and they had the, like a picture of a woman's vagina with a big open sore on it. It's like, oh my God. And
yeah,
but that's enough. I mean, it's like scared straight, you know, where you're like, oh, this could happen. And, you know, and then also with girls, you know, I mean, they've got that, the thing of getting ovarian cancer. If somebody has, which venereal, what is it, genital warts? Well, it's HPV. Sometimes people get warts from that and sometimes they don't, but it can lead to cancer.
Cervical cancer,
yeah. So it's like if instead of saying, no, you shouldn't do that, but say, hey, you know, here are some of the things, legitimate things can happen. Here's a photograph. Here's a photograph of a penis covered with genital warts.
Here's a photograph of a 16-year-old with a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
That's theirs, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, if they understand that there are huge and heavy big deal consequences, then they're going to think twice before they make stupid choices. And it's not to say, again, teenagers always make stupid choices. I mean, that's
right.
That's you kind of have to. So you learn, but it's like,
and they know everything.
Yeah, of course
they
know
everything. It's good.
I think that's going to be it. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I loved it. What a fun day. What a fun show.
All right. Well, awesome. Then I think it's on February 9th, which is a Saturday. We're going to be interviewing Charlotte Clemmer. So everybody listen to that show. And I guess that's it. So we can wrap and we can get our music playing.
Let's get it. Oh.
David.
Oh, yeah.
I just love David Bowie.
Me too.
And Steph.
I'd love him.
All right, everybody.
Have a groovy day.
Take care. We'll see you the next time. Still don't know what I was waiting for. And my time was running wild. A million dead end streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste.